This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, January 4th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll have the latest on disaster relief efforts in Boulder County. We'll also examine the rise in egregious behavior from airline passengers. And we'll play our weekly comment line, comments from listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU. At the bottom of the hour, we'll go to the BBC News headlines. Then it's How on Earth. This week, Beth Bennett looks back on her favorite science stories of 2021. At 9 a.m., it's Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker, known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, James Wise will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. But first, it's time for local and regional headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
The Boulder Office of Emergency Management announced last evening additional neighborhoods in Superior impacted by the Marshall Fire are now reopened under a soft closure status. Residents will need to provide identification at checkpoints as part of the restricted access. The reopened areas include Spanish Hills, downtown Superior, Discovery Park, and Original Town, excluding the Sagamore subdivision. South 76th Street will remain closed. Superior Marketplace and businesses on the west side of McClassen Boulevard will be accessible to employees and contractors only. Superior businesses in the area east of McClassen Boulevard will remain under a hard closure with the exception of Sports Table and Urgent Care. Fire crews reached 100% containment of the fire perimeter according to an update yesterday by the Rocky Mountain Type 1 Incident Management Team. The spread of the fire reached just over 6,000 acres. According to the update, heat still exists within the contained area, including areas among structures. Areas of significant heat have the potential to flare back up, and crews are continuing to remove heat and vegetation and around impacted structures while preparing for today's forecasted winds. Boulder County Sheriff Joe Pelley said at a news conference yesterday he did not have an update on the two people reported missing from the fire, a Superior woman and a man from the Marshall area. Pelley said crews are working at two scenes where a recovery of a body is possible, but the work is very difficult. We'll have more from the media briefing after headlines. The Colorado Division of Insurance will be hosting a virtual town hall this evening starting at 5:30 p.m. for individuals impacted by the Boulder County fires. The state's insurance regulator will provide the latest information regarding insurance, and attendees will be able to ask questions. Registration information is available at doi.colorado.gov or by calling 303-894-7490. The Internal Revenue Service announced yesterday victims of last week's fires will have until May 16, 2022 to file various individual and business tax returns and make tax payments. The extension follows the recent disaster declaration issued by the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Affected taxpayers will also have until May 16 to make 2021 IRA contributions. The May 16 deadline also applies to quarterly estimated income tax payments due on January 18 and April 18, and quarterly payroll and excise tax returns normally due on January 31 and May 2nd. Boulder City Council is expected to approve a settlement this evening between the city and Sammy Lawrence, a black man arrested in 2019 while filming a police interaction with unhoused individuals. Lawrence was charged with obstructing a peace officer and resisting arrest. Attorneys for Lawrence say Boulder police officer Waylon Lolotai, the officer filmed, violently threw Lawrence to the ground and arrested him, all without probable cause. Lawrence sued the city and Lolotai last March, asserting his First and Fourth Amendment rights had been violated. Under the proposed settlement, Boulder will pay Lawrence $95,000 and will provide data regarding how frequent Boulder police officers use force, including drawing weapons, from July 1, 2019 to June 30, 2021. Lolotai left the Boulder Police Department in September 2020 amid an internal investigation on social media posts by a company that he ran that celebrated police violence against civilians. Lolotai also faced many other excessive force allegations, including an investigation during his time with the Denver Sheriff's Department, in which he resigned prior to facing discipline. Union members of Denver area King Superstores pre-authorized going on strike on Sunday. According to the United Food and Commercial Workers Local 7 Labor Union, the near-unanimous vote comes amid contract negotiations of the current collective bargaining agreement set to expire on January 8th. UFCW Local 7 claims the company is circumventing the union by hiring outside workers at higher rates, prohibiting union activity, imposing unfair labor practices, and attempting to bargain directly with workers. Close to 58% of the company's employees are members of UFCW Local 7. The Breakfast King, an iconic 24/7 Denver diner at the corner of South Santa Fe Drive and Mississippi Avenue, closed for good yesterday. The Colorado Sun reports longtime server Lori Prin confirmed the closure and said staff received little notice. The restaurant's accountant also confirmed the closure. Prien said supply and labor shortages were making things difficult for the establishment that has been in existence since 1975. Today's weather is expected to be windy with mostly sunny skies and highs in the 40s. Winds could gust as high as 60 miles per hour in Boulder and in the mid-40s for Denver and Fort Collins. Tonight will be partly cloudy with lows in the 20s. Winds will continue into the evening. Snow is expected to return to the upper Metro Front Range tomorrow. The current temperature outside the Boulder studios is 41 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Disaster relief efforts are ramping up in response to the fires in Louisville and Superior. Boulder County has opened a disaster assistance center at 1755 South Public Road in Lafayette. Governor Jared Polis says it's a one-stop center for accessing resources.
This is where folks who suffered a complete loss or had some losses, you can go and all the resources that you need are in one place. So the major insurers of the homes are there, Allstate, American Family, State Farm, Auto Owners, Shelter, USAA. They're all there. I talked to families who were doing their claims as we speak. They also have gift cards for food. They have lodging vouchers right there for families. They have FEMA and SBA, two other forms of federal assistance, and then a number of nonprofit agencies that have come together. So if you've lost your home, you're going to want to stop by the Disaster Assistance Center between 9 a.m. and 7 p.m. any day this week, 1755 South Public Road.
More of the areas that were under evacuation orders have been opened to allow residents to return. Additional dumpsters have been sent to the area to handle extra large loads, like water-damaged household goods or food that has spoiled in refrigerators that spent days without power. Boulder County Sheriff Joe Pelley says search efforts continue for the two missing people and that the investigation into the cause of the fire is ongoing.
It's being supported by experts from the Forest Service who are experienced and highly talented in investigating major fires in other states. And I don't have any updates on that investigation right now other than to say it is in full force and full swing.
Access to many parts of the affected areas remains restricted under what authorities are calling soft and hard closures. Louisville Police Chief David Hayes says that as of today, residents and others with business in the area should register for access passes.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. at the Ascent Church, which is located at 550 McCaslin Boulevard. City residents can come in and either tell us that they are the victim of a fire or if they've got still have a driver's license or a utility bill. But in any way, we're going to make sure that they leave with a pass that will enable them to get past the roadblocks or the kind officers that are there. The hard closures are still closed for safety reasons, but we thought we would speed this up with a resident-only pass, as it were. Speaking of passes, I think the school district, I believe, is going to be releasing something. I think they're also going to have a pass program for parents that are taking kids to and from school. As you know, in Boulder Valley Schools, we have open enrollment, so we have parents kind of coming from all over. So we identified routes this morning for the Lewisville schools, and I believe the county schools as well, of what would be open for parents. And then I think in the event they do have to go through a soft closed area, that the school district will issue them passes, either because their parents bringing kids to and from, or in the case of high school students, so they can get to and from Monarch High School.
Neither the fires nor record-high cases of COVID-19 are delaying the start of in-person classes at Boulder Valley School District schools this spring semester. Boulder County Disaster Recovery Manager Gary Sanfacone says sticking to routines helps to create a sense of normalcy.
Do the things in your family that take care of yourself. Get back into those normal routines. Get your kids back in schools, sporting activities, continue to do your hobbies, exercise. Self-care is critical in this effort. The other parts I really want to emphasize is one, contact your insurance company. That should be the next step. Start that process, because that is a lengthy process. As the governor said, there are insurance companies at the Disaster Assistance Center. You can also do it online. Second, go to FEMA, either online or at the Disaster Assistance Center, and register. That's also a lengthy process for finding out what kind of financial aid is available. Third, go to the Disaster Assistance Center. I want to be clear, it's going to be open for a couple of weeks, so there's no huge sense of urgency to get over there today or tomorrow or this week. Remember, take care of yourself, get your kids back in school. The center will be open from 9 to 7, 7 days a week. And go register, because there's a lot of other, there's at least right now over 20 different organizations there that provide additional services to what FEMA and the state can provide.
In addition to the physical office of the Disaster Assistance Center, the county has also launched a recovery resource webpage at boco.org/MarshallFire. For KGNU, I'm Shannon Young, and you are listening to The Morning Magazine. Reports of aggressive airline passengers disrupting flights have increased over the last year. In September, flight crews asked Congress for more help dealing with what they call egregious passenger behavior. A recent study found 40% of consumers say they are traveling less because of concerns about rage incidents from disruptive airline passengers. To get into all this, KGNU's Alexis Kenyon spoke with reporter Julia Fennell, who has been covering airline passengers' increasingly alarming behavior for Colorado Newsline.
Julia, so you write in your article for Newsline that this year has shattered the record for the number of incidents where airlines have had to deal with unruly or dangerous behavior from airline passengers. What does this behavior look like?
So there are actually a couple of laws, and then there are federal aviation regulations that regulate how passengers have to act on planes. You can't interfere with a flight crew. You also have to follow the instructions of crew members. Like, that is a federal regulation. So anyone who is not doing that, anything that is interrupting a flight or like dangerous behavior, would include assaulting a flight member, like putting the crew in danger, being disruptive, that is considered unruly behavior.
So you tell the story in your article about one man who was eventually escorted off the plane at DIA who urinated in his seat. Will you tell me that story? What happened there?
Right. So a Kansas City man was returning from Alaska, and prior to his flight leaving Alaska, he had 3 to 4 beers and a couple of shots. And then he said he also took an over-the-counter pain reliever because he had body aches from working. He had been working in a gold mine. So from my understanding is he was wearing a mask when he got on the plane, but then once the plane left, he took it off and refused to put it back on. He also refused to listen to crew members who were telling him you have to put on a mask 8 to 10 times, and he became disruptive. He's yelling. And then later, passengers notified a different flight attendant that he was urinating in his seat.
Wow, that's very unruly. Another incident you mentioned in your story is about a guy who punched a flight attendant because she was asking him to wear a mask. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So that person, his name's Brian Hoos, I believe is the pronunciation. I may be wrong on that. He assaulted a flight attendant after crew members asked him to wear a mask on a flight to California from New York. And the flight, because of his behavior, was actually diverted into Denver International Airport. And the flight attendant was bleeding from around her nose, and she was taken to a hospital by ambulance. The crew members had called Denver police officers, and the police came onto the plane when they landed and escorted him off.
Wow.
Yeah. There was one passenger who was flying from Denver to Seattle, and after he refused to wear a mask, took a flight attendant's jacket and hid it under his seat, and punched a window and tray table as well.
Wow, I can't even imagine having to deal with something like that, especially when you're in the air.
Yeah, from what I've read, it seems very scary for a lot of flight attendants. Yeah, and as of December 21st, there were 4,156 mask-related incidents reported throughout the year.
So what's going on? Why are passengers acting like this?
The FAA, they believe that masks seem to be a catalyst in more than 75% of incidents. There was an increase of bad behavior following the January 6th violence at the Capitol. So that was really interesting to read that. I spoke to a few airlines who also believe that this is stemming from alcohol. What's interesting is because of COVID, a lot of the restaurants and bars and airports, they're doing like to go alcohol, which didn't used to be the case. You couldn't just like have alcohol to go. Like you had to consume it like in the restaurant. So they believe people are bringing their own alcohol onto the flight, which is illegal. It is against federal law to bring your own alcohol on a plane.
So there has been an increase since the January 6th Capitol insurrection. That's troubling.
Right. So this has been 2021 has seen a massive increase, significant increase in the number of unruly behavior reports. So to give a little background, the number of increases in FAA investigations in 2015, for example, there were 101 FAA investigations that year. In 2017, there were 91. In 2018, there were 159. In 2019, 146. In 2020, 183. And as of December 14th in 2021, there were 1,030 incidents.
So is the FAA doing anything about this? I know they implemented a zero tolerance policy at the beginning of the year, which means passengers don't get a warning before they're fined, but are they doing anything else?
So what's really interesting is the FAA does not have the legal authority to criminally prosecute passengers. The only authority they have is to propose fines against the passengers. So last month, the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, he directed all U.S. Attorney Generals to prioritize the prosecution of federal crimes that occur on flights on board that endanger the safety of either passengers or flight crew members. And then the FAA and TSA recently announced a new partnership. FAA will share the names of passengers who have been charged with unruly behavior. And then the TSA will have the option to remove the passenger from the TSA pre-check screening eligibility.
Did you see any of the December numbers? I just can't imagine that with all the cancellations and the Omicron variant that things have gotten any better. It seems like things probably got worse.
Yes. So actually, as I was writing this, I had to keep updating it. I'd write it. And then the next day, as I was like speaking to sources, they would update numbers of incidents on their website each week. But it really is, it was really interesting. Like even between December 7th and 14th, like just like that 1 week, there were over 100 unruly passengers reports. And then of those, the FAA initiated 20 enforcement cases.
Julia Fennell is a reporter for Colorado Newsline. Julia, thank you for your reporting and for talking with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenman.
We now check in with KGNU's comment line and the listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU.
What a beautiful way to begin the new year listening to KGNU on Sunday. I heard guidance about meditating by dropping into the singular awareness that holds us all on the New Dimensions program. Then hearing inspiration from Jane Goodall about her sources of hope in the programs in Africa that she generated on Bioneers. And then on Wings, covering civil nonviolent resistance. And then at 3, Indian voices with music and stories, including those of Wounded Knee and Overcoming Adversity, shared by the host, Teresa Halsey. Thanks so much to KGNU.
Good morning. This is Evan Ravitz. My condolences to friends and family of Alicia Karamanis and the other victims of last week's Denver shooting. The shooter was indeed senseless, as Elena Claver said, but his ability to kill so many makes total sense. It's because Congress refuses to reinstate the assault weapons ban, in spite of 86% of Democrats and 55% of Republicans who won it. Gun control activists should consider a ballot initiative to ban assault weapons in Colorado. The reason they haven't done so is that a ballot initiative in Colorado requires about 124,000 signatures collected in person, which costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. Boulder has solved the signature problem with the country's first online petitions, which is how the Bedrooms Are for People initiative got on the ballot last year. This year, when online petitions get to the state level and then to the 24 U.S. states with ballot initiatives, we the people will be able to solve our own problems in a timely way. Boulder's online petitioning system worked, but not very well. Please email the City Council and ask them to fix the online petitioning system. That's council at BoulderColorado.gov.
Hi, my name is Kathy. I live in Denver. It is Wednesday morning. There's currently no signal coming on 1390. But we did have an experience about a month ago, and trying to donate about over 100 CDs to KGNU, and three times we visited the KGNU studio in Denver, the offices, I should say. So we tried, and he went to ARC and donated them to ARC because he could not get a response from the Denver KGNU offices. Still support you, still a member, but something went wrong for sure in Denver. Thank you. Bye.
Hello, this is Jim in Westminster, and I'm calling to comment on this morning's public affairs program for December 29th. I wanted to respond to some of the callers, and particularly one gentleman that tried to claim that several alternative treatments for COVID are just as viable as the vaccines, and therefore anti-vaxxers should not be blamed for the persistence of the pandemic. This outlook is very wrong on several fronts and shows a misunderstanding of how the development of vaccines and science in general actually works. The vaccine was created by careful observation and verification by hundreds of people over thousands of hours, not from anecdotes and unsubstantiated claims. Most of the data from these studies can be found online if one is truly interested in getting the full story. And to say that the alternative treatments are as viable as the vaccine is not just misleading, it's dangerous. I understand that it's easy to lose trust in the government and fall into conspiracy theories. These theories claim a simple explanation. But if we take the time to really look closely, this is not one of those times. As always, thank you, KGNU, for allowing the public discussion.
If you'd like to leave a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave a message at our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. Comments longer than 90 seconds may be edited for brevity. That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Stacy Johnson, Steve Miller, and Alexis Kenyon for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's coming up just after these news headlines from the BBC.